This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
If you have food allergies and sensitivities, going out to eat can be especially fraught. It was something that Shireen Yates understood firsthand. In 2013, she met Scott Sunvor at MIT, who shared her experience dealing with food allergies, and the pair decided to join forces to create a tool that would help people like them ease their minds at the dinner table. With a $10 million Series A round and two small business innovation research grants from the NIH, Yates and her team developed the NEMA sensor, a portable device that tests for gluten and peanuts in food. After 6 years in business and more than 10,000 foods tested, Yates sat down with us to talk about her entrepreneurial journey. Well, Shireen, welcome to How Success Happens. Thank you for being with us today.
I'm delighted to be here.
So I guess just to start kind of going back to the beginning, why was it important for you to start NEMA?
I found out I had a bunch of dietary restrictions and food sensitivities and found it really hard to eat out and stay healthy. And I found I was consistently getting exposed to foods I was trying to avoid, especially when eating out. And I saw that so many more people were looking at food as medicine, wanting to really understand what they were putting in their bodies. And I saw an opportunity to equip people with better information about what they're putting in their, you know, what's in their food. And that's what inspired NEMA, which is a device that tests for specifically for allergens and proteins on the spot and is being mostly used in the context of eating out and testing things that you just need a little more data.
And so before the company like officially launched, what were you excited about? What did you hope for? What was keeping you up at night?
Before the company launched, we were at MIT. I was graduating from my MBA program. And I hoped that after I graduated, I could launch a company, a team, a product, a brand. And honestly, I was most afraid of two things. One, someone might get to the market before us. This is even before we had the company. I was very paranoid of that. And also, I was also afraid of just the life adjustments that I'd have to make pursuing this dream. This graduating as a student, I was, you know, not in the strongest financial position. So it meant having to move in with my parents and really, you know, adjusting the way that I was used to really operating or living in order to start the company. But I was so excited about the prospect of bringing this vision to life that it certainly trumped those small sacrifices.
Yeah. And so once things got going, like what were some of the biggest challenges that you had to deal with?
Some of the biggest challenges were setting the right expectations, not only with prospective investors, but also your growing team, the prospective customers, and also myself. Knowing, you know, we were doing something no one had ever done before. And so when we were going out to pitch it, people were like, well, how long is this going to take? How much is it going to cost? And obviously you have an idea, but I'm a data-driven person. And when I didn't have all the data to make those projections, it's nerve-wracking and it's challenging.
Yeah.
And the way to correct for that is obviously surround yourself with people that have done similar things before or comps and just get as much data as possible to make the right projections. For us, that meant working, you know, talking to tons of consumer hardware, startups, looking at how much they raised, traction. And then I think in terms of setting expectations too with customers, is we made the decision early on to be very public about what we were doing and why we were doing it to start generating awareness. This is a new product category. You know, no one had been able to test their food before, like in the way that we were delivering. And so early on, even before we had a product, we had a website and we were starting to sort of, how do we set those expectations? When were we going to be on the market? We had estimates, but you don't know. So I think that setting those expectations and, you know, hopefully you want to set the right expectations and exceed those expectations, whether it's timelines or deliverables or milestones or even product pricing. All of those, I think, were challenging when you're launching a company, and especially when you're launching a new product category or something that's completely new.
Sort of as you started to like beta test and roll out the device, like was there ever a time when you sort of were concerned that you wouldn't be able to like meet a customer like demand for it?
Meet the customer demand. Oh, in terms of like as we were rolling out the betas and just seeing the demand of the customers.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. No, I mean, I think we were really pleased by the demand, and it was, the idea was, okay, how do you, as a hardware company, how do you balance that supply and demand piece? It was totally challenging.
And I guess it seems like from the early experience that sort of the twin kind of pillars of like transparency and data kind of helped you tackle the unknown.
Yes. Yes, it did. And I think, you know, a lot of companies have different strategies here. Some want to stay totally stealth. Some want to be more transparent. For us, transparency is like a core value for our company, for who we bring on board as a team member. I think it plays a role in everything we do. We try to, you know, get all our data out to the public, all our validation data is really important to us. And then even as early as beta testing, you know, we were very, very transparent with the community. This is what we're doing. This is the data. This is how we're working on improving the validation and all of that.
And I'm kind of curious, I think we might have discussed this in the past, but sort of how did you get kind of that initial kind of community of beta testers on board?
Well, I think that goes back to even before we had a product, having a presence and having a statement of this is what we're doing. I think we had some early articles out when we, you know, when we raised a little bit of funding, and you know, that's always noteworthy and for something new. And that allowed us to start generating some interest. We started an email list that has grown pretty significantly over the last few years. But that initial pipeline, we, you know, we asked people, do you have a, you know, food sensitivity? And we all even asked early on, would you be interested in beta testing? So from some of the PR and exposure that we were getting early on, we were able to start building a community of folks just through our email with a little effort. The second thing we did too was actually, we did some specific geo-targeted ad campaigns online and just like had an ad campaign that was like, we're working on this thing to improve your life if you're avoiding gluten. Mm-hmm. You want to test it out. And that actually generated quite a bit of interest too. That was helpful for us, you know, just to get in-person meetings versus the devices that we were shipping out.
And can you talk a little bit at the point, because Nima wasn't always Nima. You guys had a different name at the beginning. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about sort of the decision to shift from Sixth Sensor Labs to Nima.
Yeah, Sixth Sensor Labs, you know, was the original name, and the idea of Sixth Sensor was we're developing the sixth sense to help you navigate your day to day, which we really like the concept, but it also doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. And I think it, as a small company, when you're trying to, especially a consumer facing company, when you're trying to develop something, developing two brands or building a brand around Sixth Sensor Labs and a product name was a little too much. And so we thought, let's consolidate into something that we think is memorable, easy to say and understand, and is what we thought is like an empty vessel where we can really build the experience around the brand name. So there was not a lot of association with it. When we came up with Nima, Nima is a Persian word, and you know, people know it mostly as a name usually, but one translation is fair and equitable, and we feel like we're giving everyone a fair chance of staying healthy at mealtime. So we shifted everything and consolidated under the Nima Labs as the company and then Nima as the product. So it was more just in terms of efficiency.
So kind of talking about like fair and equitable and feeling kind of healthy and secure, I feel like, at least from personal experience, that going out to dinner, especially with like new people, can be kind of fraught sometimes because you just want to make sure that everything is like, you want to have a good time. You don't have to be worrying about, you know, something going awry. And I was wondering kind of how operating in this space maybe changed how you thought about social situations or dealing with anxiety and nerves.
Yeah, I think that it's a really important piece of consideration for the space that we're in because food allergies and food sensitivities is really part of someone's identity, and it can be very personal. And people have very different comfort levels with being how open they are and how public they are with that, especially when eating in a social context. So as it relates to Nima and how we live in that space, and we play a very intimate role in people's lives where we're accompanying them to mealtime with the device. And we really wanted to design the experience so that it gave people an option of discretion if they didn't want to, you know, take this device out on the table and be more discreet about it. And then some people are really excited to take it out of the table and have a conversation with the wait staff. But we think it has a different impact on, generally speaking, we think it does, you know, lower stress and anxiety. but it also depends on how people use it and how public they want to be with it. And mm-hmm. so our users have different takes on that.
And over the last several years, have there been things you've learned about being a good boss and a good leader as you grew the business?
I think one of the most important lessons for me is when you're starting a company, and especially from my background, Nina, I haven't run a company before. I'm a first-time mm-hmm. entrepreneur. And I realized that we really can't learn at the rate of experience. You have to surround yourself with other people that have either gone through it before, and to me, that was really important, and or read material on areas that you might not be as well-versed in. What that meant for me practically was, you know, for instance, talking about going out for fundraising for the first time mm-hmm. and, you know, laying out the roadmap. Sure, I could have, there's so much material online that you can read and digest and learn, but I also chose to speak to, you know, 10 startup hardware companies that had successfully gone through a few rounds of financing and sat down with them and asked, you know, could we have your time, 30 minutes of your time to understand how they did it? And that's what I mean by not learning it. I could have just gone through the experience, learned, and then where there were failures, incorporated that in. But sure. I think you have to anticipate, you know, what you're going to be learning and surround yourself with those experts. I think the second thing too is, I feel like I repeat myself all the time. And I think that I wasn't as good at that in the beginning. You know, I had something in my head and I was like, well, of course, everyone else. I said it, you know, a week ago, everyone remembers, but just the repetition for not only the team, but also for your customers, also for your stakeholders is like what you're doing, why you're doing it and sharing those wins. I think that was also a key learning for me because before I tended to internalize or just assumed people knew, even if I said it once, they would all remember, but I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. And especially if you feel like you're saying it all the time in your own head, it's like, I'm a broken record. What's going on? But people you haven't really interacted with, it's new to them. So they want to hear about your vision. But yeah, that makes total sense. So like going forward, like what is your vision for the company? Like, what do you want the brand to be and represent?
I want Nima to be synonymous with feeling comfortable eating socially and feeling safe and trust when it comes to food. And I hope that when you go to search for any sort of menu or food item, that there will be a Nima score, you know, in terms of what's being tested, how often it's being tested. So you have that extra layer of information to deal with when you're navigating and searching. And then I hope when you go out to eat or any restaurant, there's like a Nima certification that it means like, okay, there's users like me that have been here, or this establishment has been testing themselves. So we know that this place recognizes people like me with my dietary restriction. I hope that Nima is everywhere at every touch point. When you're about to take a bite, you know that you have this extra layer of information in the palm of your hand. And I certainly hope we get to a point where we can develop a test for everything you're interested in your food. So mm-hmm. you can get a custom test for whatever your dietary restrictions are.
And kind of a broader question, but like, what does success mean to you now? And how has that maybe changed over time?
I think, you know, success to me means delivering on your commitments and exceeding those expectations. I think it has evolved. That definition of it has evolved since we started. I mean, success. I mean, maybe still is survival.
Sure. Of course.
One more day at a startup, you know, and now it's executing on that vision, setting the right expectation, exceeding those expectations with all those stakeholders. And I think I'll know Nima is successful when we can see that vision, when we see that vision playing out, and when we know that data is in such demand for not only consumers, but food establishments, restaurants, food service providers, that it's everywhere. That's when I feel like we've really made a difference. Every day I feel like we make a difference with some of the customer stories. Mm. But yeah, I think as an entrepreneur and people that are starting something, the definition does change because you're audacious, you're ambitious, and you want to keep pushing things. So yeah, I think it's a great question.
Yeah. And kind of going off that, can you talk a bit about like how you like set goals and benchmarks for yourself? Because especially I'm sure with hardware and like biotech, there are definitely like marks you have to meet, but like, how do you guys kind of assess that as you go on?
Yeah, we definitely do the OKR objective key results quarterly. set those goals quarterly. We have annual goals as well, and then biannual check-ins. And then, you know, sometimes we have to shift depending on if there's a market opportunity or another opportunity. But every quarter, we're pretty regimented about, okay, what's the objective and key result? And then we have reviews every week on how we're tracking against those goals.
Oh, wow.
So it's very objective and key result-based. We try to quantify as much. I started my career at Google, and it's something that I ported over from Google that I think has served us well in terms of keeping everyone aligned and on the same page. The challenge of OKRs too is always at a startup. Sometimes a quarter is a long time frame. So, you know, making sure that you have those regular check-ins and checking in over time.
And I guess, like, what is your kind of best piece of advice for a first-time entrepreneur and for if they're discouraged or if they're worried or anything like that, that sort of things won't go? I mean, the things can always kind of go awry, you know, the statistics being what they are. But, like, what is your advice for that first-time entrepreneur?
I think that it's working and signing up to start something or start a company or launch a product. My advice is first, just make sure you're so passionate about the problem you're solving, because things will go awry. Things are not going to go as planned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you have to have that passion and the vision and the belief. This is supposed to be so intrinsic that you can leverage that and lean on that when things are really hard. And it seems like all you're getting is no, or the obstacles just seem too insurmountable. You need to lean on that. So first is by make sure you're really pumped about what you're working on. I think that's really, really important. And then, I mean, the second is there will be likely a sea of no's. You know, there will be a ton of people that maybe whether you're fundraising, maybe whether you're trying to recruit or trying to get customers, there's always going to be those no's, and all you need is those few yeses to build on. And that to me is very motivating, because instead of focusing on, oh gosh, feel like we're getting rejected all over the place, while we're making really great progress, even if we get, you know, those few early adopters, and then that builds on itself, you know, that early adoption, whether it relates to financing or hiring or sales, just builds on itself, builds on that positive momentum. So know that one no is closer to a yes.
And I'd love to hear about kind of the Edison Awards and what's coming up for you there.
Yes, thank you. No, we're so thrilled to be a finalist for the 2019 Edison Best New Product Award. So we actually, a few years ago, were placed for gluten sensor, and this one's for the peanut sensor. The reason why this means a lot to NEMA is that it's really a lot of the top business executives and academics and a really cross-functional group of judges choose these products. And we're really thrilled to be recognized as a finalist. And we're actually in a personal protection category. I feel like NEMA, we always say, let NEMA take the first bite so you don't have to. So I feel like it's very apt.
Definitely. So is there anything coming up that you are excited about for the company? Anything that's on the horizon that you'd love to share?
Yes. We, as you know, we recently launched Peanut. And we also recently launched NEMA tested results at food restaurant chains. So we actually had our team supplement some of the community usage at restaurants. And we've been doing a lot of testing and continue to do testing there. I'm really excited about some of the early traction we're getting in NEMA in the kitchen. So imagine we actually recently we're doing a partnership with Vanderbilt University, where the college itself is using NEMA's to make sure that things that are labeled gluten-free and peanut-free are actually gluten-free and peanut-free, and using it back of kitchen to do that audit. So I'm very excited about growing that as well. I hope, like, it's kind of part of that vision that we hope that, you know, eventually NEMA's will be everywhere. It'll be tested even before you sit down, you know, it's been NEMA tested. And that's a big part of our vision.
Great. So Shereen, that's actually all I had for you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.